This is Anna Mumford from the ACLU. Since 1977, the state of Florida, while allowing gays and lesbians to serve as foster parents, has barred gay people from adopting. Martin Gill and his partner live in Florida and became foster parents to two young brothers in 2004. After a year or so in their care, it became clear that the children would not be reunified with their biological family. But, because of the ban barring gays and lesbians from adopting, Martin and his partner would be ineligible to adopt the children. Worried that the children would suffer if they were torn away from the family they had grown so bonded with, Martin and his partner contacted the ACLU, asking for help. On November 25, 2008, a Florida judge ruled the gay exclusion unconstitutional and granted Martin's petition for adoption. What follows is an interview with Martin about how he and his partner became foster parents and their decision to challenge Florida's adoption ban.
I'm Martin Gill. I live in North Miami, in Florida. I have a partner who we have been together for the last almost 9 years now, and we have a son who is now a teenager. We decided that it would be nice to have another child. We had looked into everything from surrogacy to adoption and different things. At that point, we didn't know that in Florida it was legal to foster. What brought that to our attention was one day I was just sitting there watching TV back in 2002. There was Rosie O'Donnell being interviewed by Diane Sawyer, and she was talking about the fact that she was a foster parent in the state. It occurred to us at that point, you know, we were looking halfway across the world to adopt, and that we could provide a service, a really needed service here in Florida, by being foster parents. Years ago, I'd worked at an Easter Seals camp for special needs kids, and each week we'd have like a different group of kids with different kinds of disabilities. And my partner also worked with the school system with emotionally handicapped kids. We felt that it would be a great service, that we had something special to provide, and we decided at that point we would rather look into foster care to kind of complete our family that way. In 2002, late 2002, we had applied with the Department of Children and Families. We went to an orientation, and in early 2003, we went through our MAP classes and were licensed as foster parents. About 3 days after we got our license, they called, and we got our first foster children. We had originally planned to foster HIV-positive kids or other kids with some special needs. But there was so much need that really by the third day they already had kids with us. So we basically took whoever they felt that they needed to place with us. We ended up with 7 kids that came and went. None were more than 6 months at a time. On December 11, 2004, I got a call from a PI. And first thing I said to her was, we're not taking any kids. And she said, why not? And I said, well, we're planning on this move, and it would be a real disservice to take kids that we can't keep. Anyway, she came back and said, well, this is a temporary placement. This will be 1 to 2 months. They have an aunt that's interested in applying to be their caretaker. And we just need you for really a short period of time. And she said, you could take these guys in and give them a nice Christmas. Anyway, at that point, she got me. So we said yes. And here we are, almost 4 years from that point. And our temporary foster kids are still with us. From the moment they walked in, boy, they were a neglect case, and I could see that was true. The four-year-old had the whole top of his head. He looked something like me, like he had male pattern baldness, because this whole top of his head was covered with ringworm to the point that his hair was no longer growing up there. And it was all flaky and yellow. And he just looked terrified, traumatized. The baby, who was 4 months at the time, she was more concerned about the baby. She pointed out that there were medications for the baby in the bag and that he had been sick and that he has a bad ear infection. As soon as she left, I went about looking at the medications to read what was going on and that kind of thing. And I looked at it, and the prescription was amoxiclav, and it's supposed to be refrigerated, and it was warm. And then I looked at the date and it was from early on in November. I found out a little bit later. I knew that it was a neglect case, but I went to visit their home and I found out that their caretaker was their aunt, and she had three of her own kids who were all toddlers and younger. She was 8 months pregnant. She was taking care of three of their four sisters plus those two, so it made about 8 kids that she was taking care of. They were living in the grandmother's apartment. The grandmother was bedridden, and so she was also taking care of the grandmother, who couldn't even get out of bed. It was at that point that she called DCF. So really, I don't think bad at all about the biological family. This woman was doing all she could. Really, to be quite honest though, those kids were taking care of each other. My 4-year-old knew how to take care of his little brother who was 4 months. He knew how to feed him, he knew how to change him, and when they came to live with us, he wanted to push me out of the way to do those things. The older child, who was 4 at the time, was completely traumatized by the event. And in fact, it was about 2 weeks. For 2 weeks, he didn't speak at all. After about 2 weeks or so, he started speaking, but it was something we couldn't understand. It was just a sh-sh-sh, and he was speaking, but not really opening his mouth while he'd speak. It took over a month before he was speaking normally. And that was just the trauma of the separation. Really, I wouldn't say he was thriving until up to about 2.5 years in our care. And at that point, things just really turned for him. Today, he's a very happy child. He smiles a lot. He has a lot of friends. His teachers say he plays well with others. I had a report just yesterday from his teacher that he was talking too much to the other kids. And the teacher said, well, he's got this friend and this friend and this friend, and they just talk too much in here. And I had to tell the teacher that makes me happy, because here's a child that for the longest time wouldn't speak at all. And then when he began to speak, for the first several months he was very depressed and didn't seem to bond with anybody. And now his teacher's giving me reports that he talks too much and he's got too many friends. And that really makes me feel good. As far as the little one, the earache was pretty severe. It actually perforated his eardrum. At the point that his eardrum perforated, which was about the second day with us, he felt much better because it took the pressure off. We have managed to kind of backtrack from the prescriptions. I got in to see the doctor the next day. We got new prescriptions. And within about, it took a little while, but within a couple of weeks that really cleared up. And at that point, he was just the happiest baby. The problem with being a happy baby, this baby apparently had never bonded to any single adult. So at that point, at 4 and 5 months, he was willing to just go to anybody. It could be somebody in the line at the grocery store, and he would go to them and smile at them and let them hold him, and he just seemed like a joy. What we were told by a psychologist is that's not really a good thing. That means that this baby had never bonded with any adult. So about 2 months passed, and of course, you know, you feed the baby, and we held the baby and changed the baby, but I also have a little backpack, a baby backpack, and it's supposed to help with bonding by actually wearing them close to your body. And at about 2 months, that baby was thoroughly bonded to myself and my partner. In that, you know, he'd still smile at other people, but really didn't want to be picked up by a stranger. And, you know, if something scares him, he'd be looking for us and coming back to us. And that means really that they're normally bonded. We had a trial date coming up and possible news coverage, and it's possible that the teachers and different people would know about it. We felt it necessary to explain what adoption is. In terms that maybe a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old would understand. Unfortunately, I explained, you know, it makes you permanent, and you're a permanent part of the family, but they kind of looked at me like, we don't get it, we already are permanent. They really didn't get that at all. And I thought, well, I'll do one aspect. I said, you know, your names are gonna change. And our older child, who was, I guess, 7 at the time, looked at me and he was kind of panicked because he's a little behind his class and he just learned to really write his name well. And now he's going to have a new name. So anyway, I sat there and I wrote out my name to show them on one piece of paper. And then for the four-year-old, I wrote out his name, his new name on a piece of paper. And then for the seven-year-old, I wrote out his name the way it will be. And then with the four-year-old, I said, let's practice writing them. And we were writing them down. And I was holding the four-year-old's hand and going over the letters because he can't really write yet. And the older of the two, after he'd done it, written it out about the second time, all of a sudden he had just this look of pure contentment on his face. And he said, Poppy, we're going to have the same name. We're going to have the same last name. And I said, yeah, we're going to be a permanent family and we're all going to have the same name. And he just got this smile on his face, and I only really wanted to write it down maybe two or three times. He sat there and he wrote out his new name. 2 pages. He filled up at least 2 or 3 pages. For the next half hour, he wrote that name, and he was smiling, and he was happy. And at that point, I mean, he just got it. It's a hard concept to know what being adopted is at that age, but he got it. We were going to be a family. And having that name to bond us, the name Gil, would bond us as a family.
If you want more information on the case, please visit www.aclu.org/Gil.